Hi, my name is Agile, and I support Gen X Grown Up through Patreon, and I believe you should too. Just go to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up Podcast listener, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown-Up Podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And Mo is here, of course.
Hey, everybody.
Christmas season is upon us, and toy shopping is in high gear.
Shit.
And while most of that shopping these days is done online, we're devoting this episode to remembering the nearly extinct brick-and-mortar toy stores that we all enjoyed growing up as kids.
The things that have turned into the Halloween costume shops, right?
Yeah, exactly. The Halloween stores now. I know, right? It's sad.
Do you guys believe that Christmas is already here?
This
has been the longest and shortest year ever.
You're right. It's like the year that took 7 years to get through, and then we're at the end all of a sudden somehow.
Yeah.
Right? It's startling. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So toy stores just aren't around like they used to be. So many of them have closed up or moved on or been absorbed or whatever. And we're going to just reminisce about that Gen X toy store experience that for me at least, and we'll talk about, you know, our personal experiences, was just, it was that mecca that you walked into, that everything was bright and shiny and you wanted it. But
mm-hmm.
Appropriately enough, our fourth listener email this episode is from a patron and listener who wants to talk about one of his favorite toys.
Okay.
This episode, David wrote in, and David, the subject line of his email was Evel Knievel.
Oh, yeah.
Is he going to talk about the bike that you ripped the cord out of?
Damn straight we are.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Or the one, or you had the little thing, you mounted him in, and you spun it real fast, and you released
it. Oh, yeah.
That was awesome.
Those
I'm sorry,
awesome.
Keep going, John.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, I see a show in the future.
Well, there we go. So David writes and says, hey, guys, longtime lurking fourth listener here. Apologies if I missed this, but a fun topic to cover might be Evel Knievel.
It would totally be.
Particularly his 70s toys.
Oh, my God. He licensed everything.
Oh, yeah. The rocket ship.
You had a van. You had a rocket car. You had everything. Yeah,
I know. A car. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
David goes on to say, my friends and I were pretty fixated on Evel shenanigans,
mm-hmm.
and we had to have Evel toys when they started showing up. The one I particularly remember was the stunt cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was basically a frustrating piece of crap that I nonetheless was obsessed with.
It taught us patience.
You know, not everything behaves like it does on the commercial is what I think we all learned.
Oh, man. Those commercials were so... Because that was back before you had the internet, obviously.
Yeah.
And those commercials were your only view into what that toy was supposed to do when you got it home.
Yeah.
And it would never do what it did in the commercials. It never made the noises the same.
Never.
It didn't behave in the same way.
It didn't say
Starships
the same
didn't
way.
Fly around on their own. That was some bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm looking at you, Slinky walks downstairs. Are you kidding me?
Or in pairs.
Exactly. He says, out of months or even years of trying, I think I managed 2 or 3 impressive ramp jumps and wheelies, which is the only reason I have any nostalgia whatsoever for this toy.
Yeah, I get it.
Wow.
I totally get it.
He says, I remember one epic jump out my first floor window,
nice.
Which obviously didn't end well. And now that I think of it, that might have been the day the toy was destroyed for good.
That's awesome.
It might have been realistic, though.
That's true.
Considering Evel Knievel's jump prowess. He wasn't always
you know
the
what?
Best at landing.
Yeah. Did you break every piece on the Evel Knievel? Then it's lifelike.
Right.
Then you get the new hospital play set to go along.
Evel Knievel in
Evel Knievel ICU.
Put casts on his bones.
I think David is right. I think Evel Knievel make a great topic for a backtrack.
Absolutely.
We talk about Evel and his toys, and yeah, I think so.
His shenanigans.
Oh, yeah, and his shenanigans.
Depends on which shenanigans we're talking about.
Jumping's not the trick, Evel. Landing is the trick. That's the one that's impressive. So David wraps up and says, anyway, keep up the great work. You guys are a great distraction right now and super entertaining. Always, thanks, David.
Oh, thank you, David. That's awfully nice of you.
That's the nicest thing anyone said about me in several days. You are a great distraction. I'll take it.
I was thinking about that for a second. I'm like, you know, that's not so bad.
That's all right. I'll be a great distraction.
All right. It's a little bit all right there. All right, cool.
Well, we appreciate you, David. We appreciate any time the fourth listener takes an opportunity to write into the show. If you'd like to have your email featured on the show, just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We'll read every single one, and most of them, like David's, make the show. Or you have a show suggestion, like David, hit us up as well. You very well could end up on the schedule.
Yeah, because we definitely need suggestions. So,
as is evidenced by some of our previous episodes.
Yeah, no more Dewey Decimal System.
Would you stop disrespecting the Dewey Decimal System?
I actually enjoyed that one because I'm a nerd, but I feel like we're like, you know, that show Dirty Jobs.
Yeah.
We're toward like after like 5 or 6 seasons, he's like, we really need suggestions.
Does anybody have any other dirty jobs that we could possibly do?
I'm doing the pet groomer next, okay? I really need suggestions.
Okay. I think it's time to get into talking about some toy stores, though. Woo! If you guys are ready.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into it.
I don't want to grow up on a Toys R Us kid. They got a million toys and Toys R Us that I can play with. I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. They got the best for so much less. You really flip your lid.
From bikes to trains to video games, it's the biggest toy store there is.
Gee whiz.
I don't want to grow up, because baby, if I did, I couldn't be a Toys R Us kid.
More games, more toys.
Oh, boy.
I want to be a Toys R Us kid.
Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals, and they're meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack, and it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have over 35 options. Mm. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are right. things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. We talked about at the top of the show there that, you know, most of, I think, large majority of Christmas shopping, especially this year, if more so than ever, but even any time in the 21st century, it tends to happen online. And that's a huge contributor to, mm-hmm. I think, why a lot of these toy stores we're going to talk about are gone. But it's not the only reason. But let's go back in time in the Wayback Machine, pre-internet. And George, you were just talking about Evel Knievel, the only way you knew what was available. If you didn't see it on a commercial,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't look it up on the internet.
Yep.
You'd go to the mall, and that's where you found out what was available, you know, what was for sale, what new toys were around, what new any product was around. Because the mall, more so than just the annoying place you go where crowds are these days, that was a hub for us. We walked in the door and you're like, I want to go to the arcade. I want to go to Sears. I want to go to the toy store.
I mean, I think it depends on where you lived and what type of mall you had. Because here in Tallahassee, we kind of had the dirt mall, as they talked about.
Was that the name of the sign?
In Mall Rats? No, it's just, you know, it was the malls here were like there was one that was aging and dying already.
Okay.
That I remember as a young kid in mid to late 70s. And then there was another
one that was the brand new mall, but it didn't have a toy store, so to say, in it. And you would think that's like one of the staples of a mall.
Like that in a Gap, right?
Oh, like a dedicated just toy store. Yeah.
For me, it was going to a department store, like, you know, a Montgomery Ward's or a Sears or something along those lines, and being left alone in the toy section.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Which was different than a toy store. Completely different experience.
Yeah. I'm with you on that, because growing up in New York, it's like there weren't malls. There isn't really a shopping mall, or at least there wasn't in the city. So it was more going to like that department store area, like the Macy's, the whole section of Fifth Avenue. And again, being left in the toy section.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's definitely
what you guys had standalone toy stores in New York, right? You had the F.A.O. Schwartz and
those kinds of things. My parents wouldn't necessarily go to those unless there's a reason to go to those. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Where my mom loved going to Macy's.
Because there's not an adult reason to go to the toy store.
Right.
That's only a kid reason.
It's only a kid reason. The big thing for me was going to the Macy's or those kinds of stores that had a big toy section. And occasionally F.A.O. Schwartz.
Yeah. I think when my mom would take me to the toy store, it was running Intel. You know, it was like, let's just go wander the toy store. I'm like, yeah, that sounds fantastic. And she's watching to see what I'm interested in.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then smart she'd go mom. Back later, I think, and go shopping.
Your mom is awesome.
I agree. 100%. I remember just the experience of the malls in general. I mean, even into my, you know, my teens and early 20s, too, before they had kind of washed up and become something different. Think of the Stranger Things mall. That's what I envision when I'm thinking of these malls, you know,
sure.
from the second season. The colors and everything, I mean, everything in the 80s was neon anyway, and, you know, fluorescent lighting and stuff. And it was just, I think about Mo, when I would visit Manhattan, I go to that game store, The Complete Strategist.
Oh, yeah.
How there are board games and role-playing games and stuff stacked so far up to the ceiling that, you know, I mean, they are adding shelves and stuff. And I remember walking into these little toy stores like that, and it's, you walk into a Sears, and it's like, yeah, you got Craftsman tools, and yeah, you got refrigerators by Frigidaire and stuff. Where the hell are the toys? But in a toy store, like it's everything there is for me. And that was always the thing that it just felt so like, as a kid, the world's not for you. In a toy store, everything there is for you. It was, I think, made me feel so cool about it.
Oh, I
think the one thing for me was going in, and like I said, I didn't have the toy store experience. Right. I had the toy aisle experience more than anything. But what I remember was how quickly you made lifelong friends in that aisle. Like instantly, you and another kid would just start playing with whatever toys they were.
Yeah.
And you know, the clerks in the store, they were like, God, son of a, and because you're just on the floor and throwing balls everywhere and having a good time. I really missed doing that more often as I grew older, because I still wanted to do that. But, you know, you get to the point where you're in high school and you're like, yeah, you know, even middle school, it's like, no, I'm too cool for that. I need to, you know,
oh, yeah. What is the innocence when you're a kid? It's just Insta friends. It's just like, we're about the same age. I see you playing with the G.I. Joe. Let's do it. Right.
Exactly.
With you, dude.
Yep.
And there was no rejection in that either. Like in school, there would be rejection on the playground, right? Like the cool kids wouldn't play with the other kids and everything. But in a toy store, everybody was friends. Everybody would play together.
That's
it
right.
It was such a wonderful experience. And I don't think that'll be replicated in this internet buying age again.
That's impossible. Yeah, I know.
It's sad, but it's true.
We're going to get into talking about the experience of those toy stores, reminiscing about the ones that are gone, talking about kind of what's been absorbed and what's out there now. Before we get out of this first segment, though, I just want to kind of go around, and we just talked about, we had different toy store experiences. Do you remember what was your favorite toy store to go to as a kid, right? The place that if mom or dad said, you know what, we're going to go and buy that, the glove for you, or that action figure for you, or whatever it is. Oh. What was that place that you know you love to go? It was the place you were going to have. Mo, let's start with you with your plethora of growing up in New York stores.
This is when I was super young, but the closest store, which is probably why it was my favorite, was Woolworth.
Yes. Yeah.
Because Woolworth had a huge toy section.
Did they? Okay.
And it's like one of those places, again, you know, with my mom, you know, she's like, well, I'm going in there to look for needle and thread or whatever the heck they, you know, Woolworth sold everything. Right. And meanwhile, I'm off to the toy aisle.
And she would just let you go off on your own.
She let me go, because back then also Woolworth was very much more of a local-ish kind of store.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, people were in there so often, they knew the customers, they knew the checkout people. Mm-hmm. It was just that kind of a neighborhood feel to it. So they knew the kids, you know, which kids would actually destroy things, which kids would play nice.
Which list were you on, Mo?
I was playing nice. I was a play nice kid. Again, it's like if I ever needed a new Lego thing, or if my mom was going to buy me, because also they had a lot of inexpensive toys, which I had a much, much better shot of getting my my mom to buy me.
Right, right. In a non-birthday toy that's, you know, right, 4 or 5 exactly. bucks.
Oh, look, they have this Hot Wheel car. They have this sure. mini Lego yep. set. But yeah, so that was the one that made me, I think of right off the bat when I think of like early Toy Story experiences.
So George, what about you? I know you said not a toy store per mm-hmm. se, but if it was toy time, what was the place? What was your go-to as a kid? Do you recall?
Yep, absolutely. Publix.
Yeah, Publix?
Yep.
Really?
Yes, sir. Publix was a guaranteed toy. Every single trip, Publix was a guaranteed okay. toy, let me tell you.
Even limited selection, guaranteed, though? I think it's worth
they
it.
They weren't. First of all, Publix was not limited. How dare you, sir?
What?
You take your fancy New York Woolworths and go to hell away. Publix was absolutely a toy mecca when I was a child. Let me tell you.
Really?
So they've changed from the current Publix today.
Well, yeah, yeah. No, okay. it's not even okay. close. No, they had an entire aisle, just like any Woolworths or Montgomery Wards or anything like that. It wasn't quite as big or developed as any of those places, but they did have a full aisle that was pretty much all toys.
Nice.
There was some educational stuff in there to distract you, like some books and whatnot. You know, we just ignored that part of the aisle.
Well, it's why you can tell your parents, oh, I'm going to the educational stuff, you know.
No, I was not that intelligent at that age. No, I was going to the toy section. But it was a guaranteed buy. And we went to Publix once a week because it was a grocery store. And before we owned our own grocery store, we had to go get groceries once a week. And so every week I got a new damn toy.
Now, that's nice.
It wasn't always, you know, your Evel Knievel motorcycle.
Sure.
Oftentimes it was a new Matchbox car.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or
absolutely.
A small little Lego set maybe mm-hmm. or a spinning top even. Who the hell cares?
Yo-yo.
It's a damn toy that I'm going to play with for at least 6.5 minutes before I throw it aside or
that
something
long.
That I already have. Or
so you had a guarantee, like, we're going to the grocery store, you get to pick something?
I mean, it wasn't a verbal contract type of thing, but I knew as a young lad of 6, 7, 8 years old, it's Publix time. That means I'm getting a goddamn Matchbox. Let's go, Mom. Time to head out to get you some bread and me a Matchbox car.
Actually, that's a pretty good deal.
Your story is making me smile. That's awesome.
That is awesome, isn't it?
Well, it's a motivator to get you want to go to the grocery store. You're going to get off your butt. You're going to get dressed. You're going to get comb your hair because you know you're
getting a tax. It was a tax for my parents. Okay.
Yep.
We can't leave him at home because Dad is off working. So Mom can't leave him by himself. She mm-hmm. has to take him with him. And how do we get him to go to the store and not be a total monster screaming and crying up the aisles and everything?
Dump him in the toy aisle.
He gets a Matchbox car and he's happy.
Yeah.
Huh.
And she got a moment of peace of shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
I think it's totally worth it. Totally worth it.
As long as she could complete that shopping trip in 6.5 minutes, she was good.
What about you, John?
You know, as much as I talk about loving the toy stores, probably my go-to, really what I remember most, the youngest age, was kind of like somewhere between the two of you. There was a chain of stores in the Southeast called TGNY.
Yeah.
Remember TGNY? It's like a,
absolutely.
It's pretty much what Walgreens is today. It was a five and dime.
Okay. Okay.
And they had a great toy section. I would say the majority of my like funny novelty records I got from TGNY, because they're the kind of stores that always had them. Just like you go to Walgreens to buy a Chia Pet. Do anything that's, you know, seasonal and kitschy was there. But they had a really good toy section. And I remember getting, you know, the paratroopers where you pack the plastic parachute in his back and throw them in the air, and Green Army Men. And they were generally cheap toys. But if it was a treat, I cleaned my room or whatever, and my mom would actually make a special trip. We'd do groceries, we'd do whatever, and then we'd swing through TGNY. She'd pick up a few things and I might get a little toy. But what it was, though, the TGNY toy store aisle was really just a microcosm of like, imagine what they have in the big toy stores once I get a chance to go into those. But, you know, it was that little treat. It was that little cool thing. And just talking about the toy aisle even is making me grin. So we have a lot more to come. We're going to get into remembering some of these great old toy stores that aren't with us any longer in the next segment. So stick around.
According to legend, little folk know
Hills is where the toys are.
Hills has toy layaway. Just 10% down, a small service charge, and regular budget payments. Aisle after aisle, hundreds of toys. For fun and for learning, for girls and for boys.
Low prices, selection, and toy layaway. More good reasons why they stay.
Hills is where the toys are.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
It seems unavoidably, whenever we do some of these backtracks about, remember the good old days, that we end up having a segment about things that aren't with us anymore at all. You know, we talked all about Radio Shack and Blockbuster and, yeah, you know, a lot of those stuff that's not around anymore. And I'm going to start with what's a really sad one for me as we kind of wade through this list of great old toy stores. And it was probably, it was my toy store in the mall. I remember there was the Barrel of Fun down on one end of the mall, and about midway, you could see Sears from where it was. It was just before the food court. On the left was a KB toy store. Huge mall staple. These guys were established in 1922 as a candy store, but you know, after World War II, you know, when the baby boom happened and all these kids were around, they're like, you know what, these returning GIs are having a lot of kids, we're going to convert these to toy stores.
Makes sense. Smart move.
But before they started on financial ruin, which happened to so many of these we're going to talk about, they had 1300 stores all throughout the 50 states.
Wow.
In the U.S.
Jeez.
And oh man, and for a period of time in the mid-2000s, my wife and I were avid toy collectors. And KB, not only did we buy tons of stuff from them, they were notorious for markdowns. So we probably have a ton of stuff in the attic that has the markdown KB, like 5 stickers, like $12.99.
Oh yeah,
now it's $9.99. Now it's $5.99. You know, they would just leave the old stickers on there. I still have KB toy stickers on toys up in the attic that I found during the decline in the mid the 2000s. But KB was a huge one that I remember and loved going to.
Mm. I mean, I remember KB toy stores here in town. They opened up one in our newish mall at that time in the mid-90s called the Governor's Square Mall.
Is that the non-dirt mall?
That's one of the non-dirt malls,
okay,
yes.
Good.
Yeah. They opened up over there. I remember them being on the upper level of this one new section that got built onto the mall later on, because originally it was just a straight line mall. Then it became like a T-shaped mall as they added a little section onto it.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I was already out of high school. So I was in that in-between phase of, like, I'm trying to do adulting stuff, so kids stuff isn't there, but I'm out on my own. I have my own income source. I have relatively low bills, even though I have relatively low income, but I still have enough to go look at that stuff. And John, you and I were in the Star Trek Club at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember specifically we would go in there and look for the Star Trek action figures, you know, on the cardboard and stuff.
Of course.
I enjoyed that quite a bit. I think I missed it because
it came to your region.
It was
after
later.
The prime of when you would go to toy stores.
Yeah. And so I was always, we would go in there and I feel a little awkward going in because I didn't have the experience of going into a toy store when I was younger.
Like, I haven't been trained how to do a toy store.
Right? Yeah. Like, you give me a toy aisle, I'll fuck some shit up. But this was just a whole toy store. It was like, you know, just I would freeze in the glorious momentum of
sensory overload.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Another one you might remember is Circus World, not the theme park in Central Florida, but there was a chain of toy stores called Circus World. They were founded in 64. I don't remember having one of those in the Southeast.
I
did you have one of those
either.
Anywhere in Manhattan? Do you know, George?
Not that I remember, no.
No. Were they, I think I vaguely remember that title from a movie. Like, maybe there was a movie where they went to a Circus World or something.
Yeah, maybe so.
That's as much as I remember about them.
Now, they were not around as long. They were founded in 64, but they merged with KB Toys in 96. So before the decline of physical toy stores, Circus World got kind of absorbed by KB. So that would make sense. There's another called Child World.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. It sounds creepy. It's like, is that where I go to purchase
thinking,
some
like,
children?
I don't know if I want to go to that place.
Great people. Great food.
Child start disappearing off the aisles and you see them on a shelf 2 weeks later.
Slightly used at the end, right? They were around for a shorter time. They were founded in 62 and they were all wrapped up by 92. Mm. So they weren't around nearly as long as some of these big players.
It seems like the toy store era, from the way you're going through some of these, it was a very limited number of years when this was a phenomenon.
I think the heyday was really just post-World War II until the mid-2000s at the latest, because that's when the rise of the internet and the rise of online shopping and the rise of these giant Walmart, Target kind of stores that can compete with the toy stores, you know?
Like the big box kind of stuff.
Exactly. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, all those, I think, are factors that convene together with a perfect storm to really just choke out these little toy stores.
Yeah, and you know, I love opening businesses. It's one of my favorite things to do. I would love to own a toy store. Just the nostalgia that this is bringing back to me was like, you should take $50,000 to go open a toy store. I just don't think I could make a profit with it at this point.
You probably wouldn't. Unless you were a specialty store or something, I can't see how you could.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very much, it's tough to compete with the deep, deep pockets of those big box stores. And I think more and more. And the recurring trend that we'll see is the bigger the store, the longer it lasted. These little stores like Circus World and Child World we talked about, they were gone by the mid 90s. Mm-hmm. And it's how deep are your pockets? How long can you survive the storm of the internet and the big box stores? And so many of them didn't.
Yeah.
A couple of educational stores that I remember going into, but again, they were educational toys. Your parents would want you to go.
Like they seemed cool, but then you would open the box and you're like, damn, this is just some rocks.
Why is there numbers on this? Cut it out.
I got to do math.
There was Zany Brainy. Remember that one?
No.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, they were gone by 2001. They filed bankruptcy then.
When did they start? 2000? Because I don't remember.
I don't know. They might have been around a little longer than that. I didn't see when they opened. And then Imaginarium was another one that I also saw in malls and strip malls, especially Imaginarium.
That name kind of sounds familiar, but I don't know if it's because the name is used in other contexts or if it's because it was part of a toy store. I don't remember.
Oh, possibly. They started getting opened in the 80s, and they were actually being opened by their parent company, Toys R Us, that we're going to talk about later, the behemoth in this thing. But they were already in by the 90s, they were shutting down. And by 2003, the last Imaginarium was gone.
See, I don't know why, but for some reason, I was thinking you were going to say their parent company was Disney because the name kind of lends itself to the journey into imagination.
It does sound like Disney,
doesn't it? Well, like in Epcot, Journey into Imagination. I don't know why. That feels like that would be the store at the end of that ride.
It ought to be, right. But apparently, it's an educational toy store that Toys R Us said, well, if you don't want to come to Toys R Us, how about the educational Toys R Us? And that didn't last very long, unfortunately. Now, there are a trio of toy stores that I want to talk about here that if you don't know the toy store, you definitely know the brand. We all know Lionel, the trains, right?
They had their own stores. Right.
Yeah. So they had Lionel Kitty City. At different times, it was called Lionel Play World and Lionel Toy Warehouse. Huh. In the 60s, again, we're talking post-World War II, the baby boom, the Lionel Corporation branched out into retail stores, and they weren't just screwing around. For a while, they were the second largest U.S. toy chain.
Wow, really?
I can understand that. I mean, they were super popular. I know that we had a hobby shop here in the Dirt Mall.
Right?
And the hobby shop toy store was one that I always wanted to go in, but unfortunately for me, it was right next to the public library, so I always got steered that direction, which I was always upset about. But they had a giant train set in the front window, and that fascinated me as a child.
Mm. Well, just the name recognition of Lionel on the front of the store. I mean, it's not Bob's Toy Store. It's Lionel, or it's Hasbro or whatever. It's this big name. And so they leveraged that to great success.
Yeah, that would have been a store I would have wanted to shop in as a kid if there had been one around here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
They struggled through the 80s, and you know, by the early 90s, they filed bankruptcy and tried to come out of the nosedive a few times. But I think I read that by 93 or 94, the remaining few stores they had, they couldn't survive any longer. And that was the beginning of the rise of the internet and the rise of big box stores. It all kind of, it's a confluence of things. You know? And I'm not complaining that I enjoy my big box stores and the internet, obviously, but it's just, it's too bad what the collateral damage was, you know, these cool little stores like this.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned another one, George, talking about Manhattan. You said that Mo experiences that FAO Schwartz, flagship on Fifth Avenue.
I just figured from the movie Big, he must have been in there all the time playing on the giant piano.
Not all the time.
Doesn't every New Yorker just go dance on the piano a couple times a day? I was led to believe.
I think they pulled up the piano after that movie.
Because people wouldn't stop dancing on it. That's why.
It was just annoying. But no, what I did was, it was always a Christmas trip, like every year.
To FAO Schwartz.
The Christmas season is to go to FAO Schwartz because they had the decorated windows and everything was just geared up just for Christmas.
Yeah, because that was a big thing for them, right?
The huge display
windows, you know, like some of the other schools.
Yep, they always had an awesome display window. And plus, for me growing up, FAO Schwartz was not a store that I could probably afford anything at. Mm-hmm. You know, it was definitely a high-end, ultra expensive.
Oh, right, because it was the high-end stuff.
But it was still cool. Like, you wouldn't find G.I. Joes there, right?
Right. You would find the aircraft carrier from G.I. Joe.
Exactly. Full
right?
size.
You would find the giant stuff. You'd find the 10-foot stuffed bear.
Yeah, exactly.
They had these super prices. Like, if you want the stupidest, most outlandish toy, they had those.
They had those in spades.
Money was no object, it seemed. Yeah.
Right. And so I actually worked with somebody that used to work there. And he said it was like, it was the most hateful place to work. Because it,
really?
It sounded like, oh yeah, he said it sounded a lot like working at Disney, that you have to be nice, you have to be cheerful.
Okay.
He said there's like these, and he says, and you get these spoiled rich, just.
I expected, yeah, probably spoiled
rich. Yeah,
brass.
Just, yep. You know, and he said that there was one kid that wouldn't stop running and screaming through the store, so finally he got tired and he tripped him. As soon as he did it, he's like, I probably should find another job. He's like,
yeah, I'd last all of about 15 minutes in a place like that. Yeah. Like, I got to be nice to these little bastards. Right. To hell
exactly.
With that.
I can only take it so long.
Throwing this kid into the damn ball pit and choking him out.
Yeah. But still, though, I mean, but as a store, though, it was almost like this magical thing when you walked in there because they had the giant nutcrackers on the escalator. You know, it was just.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They were big into the pageantry of how to display these things in a store, right?
Exactly.
It's almost like buying was secondary. Because they only made three sales because every toy was $1,500.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And you go, and every inch of the store was decorated for Christmas.
It was.
Every single inch was decorated. So it was, as I said, that's what I remember most about it.
You know, I can say one time I got to visit that Fifth Avenue store because you may or may not know, I didn't until I read it and remembered that that store has been closed down because we're going to talk a bit about Toys R Us. There was a merger of FAO Schwarz and Toys R Us. So as they were experiencing this financial trouble, this name that was founded in 1862, FAO Schwarz, in 2015, that giant just landmark store, no longer a toy store, closed down.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Now, you know, the name FAO Schwarz is still around. In fact, I was just in Target yesterday and I saw here's a line of toys with the quality brand FAO Schwarz on them. It's like the Louis Vuitton of toys, I guess. I don't know, but
it's something like that, right?
Yeah, but it's still around as a brand. And there is a new store in Manhattan over at Rockefeller Plaza. It's just not the giant one that everybody kind of knows from the, you know, from Big or with Tom Hanks or anything. And they've opened some other locations in Beijing, London, and Dublin. So despite the fact that the biggie's gone.
No, yeah. It's still, I mean, as a brand name, I'm sure it still has a lot of value.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we still know it even though the store is gone. So it's obvious that, you know, it has left some impact.
Yeah, true, true.
And I mentioned that FAO and Toys R Us had become merged. In the next segment, after this break, we are going to get into the 500-pound gorilla in the room, Toys R Us. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Child world, let's take a look and see.
On sale this week, The Generals, Ideal's electronic battle game, just $23.88. Holly Hobby Bake Oven from Coleco, the electronic oven that actually bakes, sale price $14.99. Fiddlesticks, the giant toy builder set from Knickerbocker, only $16.97. And as Peter Panda says, it's so nice to know that prices are low and shopping is friendly and fun.
Child world, everything a toy store should be.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!
We can't talk about toy stores without talking about the toy store,
right?
Which was the Toys R Us. I mean, that
I
thing
don't
was.
I want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid.
With the drafts and all that stuff.
Yep. Jeffrey.
Yeah. And the thing is that they were around for a really long time. I mean, they were founded back in April of 1948?
Yep. Charles Lazarus. He opened a children's furniture store.
Who knew?
Right? He started adding toys again when? You know, early 50s, you know, post-World War II. And then he's like, there might be something to this toy store deal. And he shifted. By 1957, it had been renamed to Toys R Us. And it was Charles Lazarus's dream to have this giant toy store. And man, did it grow.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah, it just grew like mad. I remember growing up having to, like at Christmas time, waiting for the Toys R Us catalog to be in the newspaper.
The catalog, the big thick,
thick Christmas thing. And, you know, I remember eating a bowl of cereal and just flipping through that, skipping past all the pink pages and then going to like the cool stuff.
the girls' toys. We don't care about those.
The girls' toys. Like, oh, geez. You know, back in the day when they had girls' toys. But that's just looking at all the cool, because I was like, if it wasn't on a TV commercial, that's where I discovered, like, look, they have a G.I. Joe scuba diving set or whatever.
Right, right.
And for me, the way that I know Toys R Us was big was Tallahassee finally got one in the late 90s. Other than
the late 90s.
Yeah, because Tallahassee didn't get anything until it got big, and then it was 20 years after it was big before Tallahassee would get it. And they built a whole store, like this big giant warehouse looking Toys R Us thing on this weird hill next to a strip mall place and across from our non-dirt mall. And I was just so sad because I was like, where the hell was this when I was like eight? You know, everybody else had one. Nope, not me. I had to go to Publix and get my Matchbox cars. But
not anything wrong with that. But yeah, you missed out on the Toys R Us when you were a kid. I know. But Mo, you were talking about the catalog. I don't know if you saw, but Amazon sent out a toy catalog this year. Did you get one in the mail?
I did not get one.
I didn't either.
I don't think.
Really? It was. It just came in the mail. It looked like junk mail. I'm like, what's this? You know, you get all these little catalogs. They sent out a strictly, it was like the size of a magazine, about as thick, and it was all toys you could buy from Amazon.
Oh, that's probably smart.
And I got it. I'm like, this is like the Sears wish book. This is like I can flip through this and look at stuff. And it was all, I mean, it was young kids' toys. It wasn't stuff I'm particularly interested in collecting or looking at now, but I had a great time flipping through it. And I remember just what you were talking about. The Toys R Us catalog would show up in the newspaper, in the mail. Yeah.
Yep. That's smart. That's actually probably smart marketing too.
Well, if it worked before, kids want to flip through that. I mean, they probably it's available on the tablet too, knowing the kids today, but
is there an e-version of this catalog I can look at?
Can I get this on my Kindle? I'm sorry, I can't use paper. Earlier, I mentioned Jeffrey the giraffe, who is the mascot for Toys R Us. I didn't know that initially that wasn't his name.
What's his name?
And I think his old name was better. He was called Dr. G-Raff.
Oh, that's great. What's wrong with that?
I think that's clever. Dr. G-Raff. I don't know why, what he was a doctor of. I mean, he was a psychologist. I don't know if he was, you know, board certified.
Marketing.
He was a... right, he was a doctor though, and they even remember the offshoot of Toys R Us, Babies R Us. They were such a behemoth that they opened an offshoot for even younger kids.
Yeah, and this old like cribs and strollers, right? And all that fun stuff. Yeah.
And I think they had like some maternity wear and baby's clothes and, you know, onesies and jumpers and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And bottles and everything.
Do you guys remember the Toys R Us Christmas commercial?
Which one?
Right.
I'm talking about the one where it's like animated, where it's like they're at the fireplace and it's like the world's biggest toy store is Toys R Us.
A lot of them. I don't know if that one specifically, but.
But I remember they had like, they were big on the Christmas thing.
A lot of the Toys R Us commercials weren't so much about what toys you could buy. It was about celebrating the brand. Look how awesome it is to come to Toys R Us and dance with a giant giraffe. You know, that's kind of.
Yeah, I don't remember any of the Toys R Us commercials being specifically here, come buy this G.I. Joe you know, new cartridge for your Atari 26. No, it was
brand building.
Toys R Us is awesome. Come here and spend your money.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right.
Celebrating how much fun it is. Yep.
And if there was a toy you wanted, the odds are they had it.
Oh, they had. They didn't have to tell you because you knew they had everything, essentially. Right. That was the assumption.
They were Toys R Us. That was the whole point.
They had it. Well, not everything lasts forever. They were in the toy business for 65 years. And at one point had 1,600 stores all over the planet. And, well, first of all, let's talk about the online debacle. We were talking about
the
rise of the internet. Now, they had a great idea. They said, we're going to open ToysRUs.com. Do you remember we talked about Radio Shack, how they opened RadioShack.com and they pared down their catalog and it was crap?
Yep.
Well, Toys R Us opened ToysRUs.com in 1998. And in many cases, they failed to deliver orders before Christmas.
Which is like the worst thing you do for toys.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For the 1999 Christmas season, toys ordered at ToysRUs.com did not arrive until days after Christmas.
That's like getting your Thanksgiving Day turkey in February.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. You missed the point, the entire thing. What happened? You're this trusted brand, how great toys are for kids, and they're not even there for Christmas. And so they wised up. The very next year, in 2000, they teamed up with Amazon, who was well on the way to becoming behemoth in the year 2000. Granted, it's 20 years ago, but still, they were on the way up.
And they had the infrastructure.
Yeah, they had an exclusive deal. They're like, Toys R Us will be the exclusive toy provider for every toy on Amazon, which sounded like a great deal.
Yeah.
However, after a short time, Amazon reneged on the deal because Toys R Us, quote, failed to carry a sufficiently large range of goods, including the most popular lines.
Mm. They ran out of stuff. Basically.
They could not keep up with the demand on Amazon for variety and volume, so they had to cut the cord. And so that was a potential. They could have been folded into Amazon if they had done well there and still be alive.
But of course, back then, Amazon was grabbing every online toy store. Remember eToys and all that stuff?
Right.
I mean, Amazon was just snatching all
they
of
would
them
grab, They would grab like a pet store or a shoe store, and they would fold them in. They would try to, it was their strategy. Had that gone better, I think Toys R Us might have had a better path. Now, I said in 2006, they acquired FAO Schwarz, so that was another money drain for them. In 2017, they filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Mm. This is just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
In August of 2018, the last physical Toys R Us store, gone.
Yep. You know, it's odd because that 2018 time period was the most I ever shopped at Toys R Us.
Because it was on clearance.
Everything's on clearance.
It was on clearance. And I went and spent $400 and bought the most ridiculous amount of items. I got stuff for you guys that I gave over to you. We were talking about doing mystery boxes for each other and whatnot. But I just never went in Toys R Us because we didn't have one when I was younger. Then when I got older, and they did open one up, I was doing other things. I ended up moving away to a different city. And then when I moved back, by the time I got back, that Toys R Us that was here in Tallahassee, that brand new, beautiful store that they built just a few years earlier, it was really kind of dirty and filthy and nasty in there.
Yeah, a lot of them had that problem.
Yeah, it's the opposite of FAO Schwarz, right? You talked about, Mo, that your friend who worked there had to, you know, be polite and friendly and on point every time a kid came up to him or something. Toys R Us was the exact opposite experience of that for me. It was a ridiculous money grab that they didn't put any effort into making it look good. So when they closed and I got to buy all that stuff at like 90% off, I was kind of happy that they did close.
Yeah, it really kind of started to feel, you could feel the money crunch, and it started to feel much more corporate in the later years. I know, because I did frequent Toys R Us pretty regularly, you know, as a kind of a toy collector, and it was a place you could go and, well, if you're looking for this action figure, they're going to get it. I mean, the scalpers might get to it before me, but they're going to have it at least in the store at some point. And you would go, and it definitely went downhill. You're right, George, from that candy-coated, let's have a great time, it's a kid's playground, to come purchase your toy, beep, beep. You know, it was much more assembly line. You pulled a tag off of the shelf instead of actually picking up the toy off the shelf. You know, it was super streamlined, and it had a more impersonal feel for sure. Honestly, I'd never processed that until you mentioned it, but you're right. It definitely had that more corporate, we're struggling feeling. The writing might have been on the wall even back then.
I'm sure it was. It was. I mean, except because one is you could find anything they had cheaper online. And also at that time, you know, people gained a lot more confidence in online sales that they would get it by Christmas.
Yeah. Well, for sure, by when they finally folded, 2017, 2018, right in there. I mean, if you couldn't survive in the internet economy by then, you're not going to be able to survive.
Yeah, exactly.
It was firmly entrenched.
Well, think about it. What were they selling? Let's think about that. Just like we talked about with their commercials, they weren't selling the toys. They were selling the experience of going to Toys R Us. Mm-hmm.
And that had degraded dramatically.
And that turned out to be crappy.
Yeah.
I mean, so if you're not going to maintain the illusion that you're selling me in the commercials, why the hell am I going to shop there when I can go somewhere else and get it cheaper and have
a better experience?
A better experience.
With less hassle.
That's the point. Yeah, that's the problem.
Absolutely.
It's a strange, just like, you know, chicken or egg thing. You know, did they start going downhill and therefore the money problems? Or they have money problems, therefore they went downhill? Whatever it was definitely a confluence of events that just, it crushed all these other littler stores we talked about. And Toys R Us, they were a stalwart holdout, but they just couldn't hack it.
Right.
They're still a brand, and there are even rumors of them maybe opening up new stores. But, you know, right now they do pop-up stores here and there, like in the middle of a mall, a kiosk. They'll have little pop-ups here and there with
like for the holidays thing, you know, or something.
What's the hot toy? But not like a full-blown thing.
Yeah, I think that day is over, personally.
It seems like it. You know, and there are some toy stores still around, and we're going to talk about what those are and what the toy buying experience is today and a little bit more of our memories in the next segment. So stick around.
Staying with Grandma is fun.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.
We have alluded to it and referenced to what the toy buying experience is now and what led to the decline of these dedicated, you know, kind of brick and mortar toy stores. But in this segment, I really want to dig into exactly what those causes were and what the state of buying toys is today, because we still buy toys, and then sometimes they're action figures that cost $100 of our favorite horror monster or something, but we're definitely still in the market, and some of us still have kids that are looking for toys. So let's talk about that. Now, we talked about the big box retailers that you called them, George, rightfully so. You're talking about what? Walmart, Target.
Targets, yeah, Kmart.
To a lesser degree, maybe. Kmart, as they're starting to close.
Oh, yeah, not Kmart anymore. But yeah, I mean, for me, though, it's like, especially like if I'm trying to buy something like for my little niece or nephew or something like that, it's hard to beat the experience of walking up and down an aisle looking for something to catch your eye, which is totally different than what you could do online. Online, you have to be kind of drilling down to a specific thing.
You almost need to know what you want to go online. A little bit.
Whereas there, it's like aisles, like I kind of look at an aisle like, oh, this looks interesting. And you can walk down the aisle, say like, and then, you know, and that's where you get an idea like, oh, you know, I never thought of getting them a jewelry making kit or whatever, but I think she'd really like that.
And, you know, Mo, that's exactly why I was going to take issue with something you said in the last segment. So in the last segment, you said that you felt like that day was over for Toys R Us specifically, I'm sure.
Well, that big, but I think the big box toy store only thing.
I think there is a real need. And I think in the next 15 years, maybe 20 years, you'll start to see the mom and pops coming back, because
I would love that.
I think that the Jeff Bezos of the world and the Amazons and the Walmarts and the Sam Walton family jerks, you know, whoever the hell else. I think that people are getting more and more disenfranchised with those locations, because you now start to see movements, even where people talk about it in news and online, that they don't want to go to Walmart anymore just because of what Walmart has done in a community,
right?
Or what Walmart has
their
done
buying practices
and, yeah, their buying practices, the way they treat their employees who work there. And I think probably if we can start to see some economic turnarounds coming for us soon, that, and I don't mean economic turnarounds for the country, because I'm not getting into political geo discussion, all that crap, because yes, maybe our economy is doing well in America, but it's doing well for a very small amount of people at a very high level. When you start to see the economic turnaround at the lower levels, I think you're going to start to see these mom and pop places start to come back. One of the biggest segments that, or the things where I see that example oftentimes, is on a TV show called Shark Tank. I know you guys have heard of it
if you haven't watched it.
You start to see now a lot of the investment opportunities coming into that tank are for small kitsch retail locations. Sometimes they're a restaurant, sometimes they're selling this kind of item or something, but I think we're going to start to see these toy store type places come back. I mean, I really believe that, because at some point, Walmart is going to die to Amazon. Target is going to die to Amazon. If we don't find ways to have local things to, as Mo said, walk up and down the aisles.
Actually put your hands on the merchandise and look at it with your own
eyes.
We're
going to be slaves to Amazon. And there then, once they, it's just like what Walmart does, right? Walmart comes into town. They drop all their prices to below profitability levels.
Drive everyone else out.
Drive everybody else. As soon as everybody else is closed, they jack the
prices
up.
Back to retail.
Right?
Yeah, right.
That's what Amazon's going to do. It's the same thing. So I think we're going to see a movement back toward that local level. And I think we're going to have to see it in the next 15 to 20 years.
And I don't disagree with anything you said. I mean, my thinking was that the idea of the big box toy store, I think, is gone. Like, I don't think we're going to see another Toys R Us kind of thing. But I do agree with you. I think that as far as, I mean, and I would love for this to happen too, because I always try to support local whenever I can. And one area where you see local toy stores that are still, like toy / game stores, let's put it that way, that are still doing okay, is on like board games and role-playing games and that kind of stuff. Like those things still exist.
Yeah, board games has made a real resurgence just in the last probably 5 or 10 years I mean, they never went away, but they kind of become cool again. You know what I mean? Like, oh, a hip board game, like a suddenly everybody on the planet knows what Settlers of Catan is. Who that game's been around forever, but people just are finding it in the last 5 years, you know?
But also, like I said, like the role-playing games and all that kind of stuff, you know, like the complete strategist sort of stores. I mean, those are still around.
Yeah. My son goes to a Magic, the card games type of store.
Yeah.
Yep.
He goes there like every Sunday and they know him and he knows them. My mother even stopped by there to get him a birthday gift because his birthday's in November. And they said, oh, you're Michael's grandmother. Yes, he likes this thing and he likes that thing. That type of experience
that you're never going to
do online.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Not.
Yep.
You know, I totally agree.
You could try to fake it, but it would be artificial and it wouldn't be accurate. Yeah. You know, I hope you're right, George. I hope there is and needs to be a resurgence of the local thing. You know, if my own anecdotal evidence is any indicator, I think maybe we're already on that path. You know, I can tell you that there are more and more independent, little niche toy and game stores cropping up. So just in my own immediate area, in my own immediate little, you know, 20 mile radius or whatever around North Florida. You know, I've started to find more and more little, now they tend to be like nostalgic toy stores. Like we have tons of Skeletor and tons of, you know, Masters of the Universe and G.I. Joe and stuff. It's not new toys so much. Now they have the new nostalgic toys. If you have, you know, somebody came out with a new line of pop vinyls or something, of course, for kitschy old, you know, retro stuff. But I've seen maybe three or four of these little, you would categorize them as toy stores. Now, they kind of call themselves collectible stores or, you know, gaming stores or whatever. But it's really just, it's a matter of pivot. The products in there are the same kind of things, the same shiny, beautiful, candy-colored toys that drew me into that old KB toy store. It's just that now, oh, they have a layer of dust on them and they're out of the box because they're secondhand. They're still there for you, but they have that new stuff. And when I go in there, it's lots of old nerds like me looking at old toys, but the kids are in there too. And they're like, oh, what is this toy? I never seen this. And like, they never seen it because they only see the toys that are marketed to them through the internet now or through commercials. They don't have the experience of walking through a toy store any longer. So these little mom and pops, it's like a resurgence for them of old toys too.
I think what you'll see is that as our generation starts to have grandchildren a little bit more frequently, I think that's when you'll see that resurgence, that retail boom of the small toy stores, because as we said throughout this whole podcast, it was an experience that we had growing up as children and we want to pass it down.
We'd like to have again or give it to our grandkids. Yeah.
A lot of our children are already in the adulting ages now. They're in their 20s or so.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we didn't necessarily have the funds to sustain that segment of retail when they were growing up because, you know, we were struggling, right? We were parents. Yeah,
we were slacker Gen Xers who were in an economic downturn, obviously.
But now, because we grew up with computers and tech and we adapt so easily, now we have decent paying jobs for a lot of us. And I think that we'll start to see that influence be recognized as, oh, the grandparents now have disposable income. They've paid off their house or their car and they want to take little Jimmy or little Sally to a toy store. Well, let me open up a toy store so that they can come and shop here.
We can. I mean, if that happens, that would align with your prediction of, you know, that timeline that you said, you know, kind of in the next 10, 15 years. Yeah,
that would be great.
I know. I agree. I mean, I remember that experience of like, you know, you said going to the toy store, getting something for yourself and like you like hugging it to your body as you go home, you know, and
it's mine. I conquered it. I got it.
Yeah.
I talked them into it.
And can you imagine being on the grandparent side of that?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's the feeling that our generation wants now.
Unfortunately, you already can. Yep.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. Right now, the only way we get that experience is when it gets here in the mail and we open up the brown generic box and hand it to little Sally.
Yeah.
That's not the same as when we see their eyes light up in the aisle, you know, when they grab a hold of that little
bar. The Disney World feeling of shopping for it, too, is a part of it, too. You know, the finding it, you won't find online. You're like, click, deliver. Yeah, man. Okay, before we get out of reminiscing about these old toy stores, I want to do one more roundtable discussion, one more question for you. So I want you to think back. What was your favorite memory formed in a toy store or a toy you got from a toy store or toy department, whatever it may be, that you still today remember either the toy or the experience or whatever it was in one of these great toy store or departments? Why don't we start with you, George? Can you recall a favorite memory from the toy store?
Well, like I said, not necessarily a toy store, because we didn't really have those here. But a specific toy, I would say it was my Fisher-Price
line that I talked about in previous episodes, not the little weeble wobble looking Fisher Price guys, mm-hmm. but the mm-hmm. the action adventure sets. And I remember specifically, and I still have it to this day, this little Jeep and raft that I got. Mm-hmm. And the raft is a yellow rapids raft with orange interior, and the Jeep is a brown Jeep, and it had a couple of little action figure guys with it. I remember getting those from I think we got them at Montgomery Ward, if I remember correctly, and playing with those in the side yard, digging trenches, turning on the water hose off the side of the house to fill up rivers and lakes and make adventures for them. That was my favorite toy that I still have a fond memory of.
That's awesome. Cool. You know, for me, I'll remember from a toy store, it's kind of a longer experience. Not to tell the story, it just didn't happen in a moment. But there was a specific toy that I wanted that I think my mom thought was terribly irrational. And it was called Hugo, the Man of a Thousand Faces. Oh. He was this little puppet mannequin guy
who
came
about.
With like glue on sideburns and noses and warts. Yeah. You could like Mission Impossible. You can make him up in different mm-hmm. like horror movie costumes or whatever. And I don't remember what it cost, but it was too damn much. It was probably $50, $60 or something, which you can imagine in, you know, the 70s or 80s, how much that was. And my mom didn't buy it for me. Instead, she said, you know what we can do? We can figure out a way that you can earn that money for that toy. So for the next several weeks, I did little chores, and it wasn't like anything I wasn't already doing. She manufactured chores. Well, if you'll help me with the dishes, you get a dollar. If you do this, and it felt like it took months. It probably took a few weeks, and I earned enough money to buy this, and I had the money in my hand, and we went back to the toy store, and it was on the shelf, and I talked to the man, and I pointed at it, and he got it for me, and I paid for it. I think I was short tax, a little bit of money, and my mom helped out. I don't remember what happened to that toy, but I remember I discovered it in the toy store. My mom taught me the value of what the toy cost because I had to earn the money for it. And I had that feeling you talked about, Mo, where you're hugging it. You're, you know, I worked for this. I earned this. I know what this toy is worth. And I still remember seeing it for the first time, not being able to afford it, and going back then weeks later with my money and getting it. That was just a phenomenal thing that left a permanent. I mean, I think it influenced my values and just how I think about money. And the, you know, the cost of things. And what a great way to teach a kid a lesson. Basically, she gave me the toy on time. She's like, I'm going to give it to you. You think you're earning it. And that worked out just really great. That was a cool, that's my toy store memory.
That's cool.
Mo, how about you? Do you have one that you can recall?
Oh, yeah,
that's left to, yeah,
absolutely. It's during a Christmas guy. I can't remember what year it was. I was super young though. And, you know, we did our FAO shorts walk through Christmas.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and FAO shorts had these little areas you could play with stuff, you know, where things were just out. And they had this building block set, except it was more of like an erector set. I still remember it was called Fisher Technique, basically was the name of the brand. Mm-hmm. Even like the basic kit was super expensive, you know, like everything else in there. But right. Let me tell you, I had a blast because you could make cars, you can make motorized things, you can make, there's really no limit to anything you can make with this. And it was meant to be like very versatile and motorized and all that fun stuff. And I played with that the whole time, you know, everyone else was walking through the store. And that Christmas, my dad got me the basic set.
Oh, he got it for you. Okay.
He got it for nice. Me. And I was like, I totally Surprise. Was not expecting it because I was like, you know, I knew how, I mean, even then I
Too
knew,
expensive.
Okay, this is pricey. You know, I maybe didn't know exactly, but I knew it was pricey. Mm-hmm. And it became like it was like my birthday Christmas gift from then on for a while was like an addition to that set because they had all these add-on sets you can mm-hmm. get. And you get, gotcha. Oh, here's tractor wheels and you could throw make real tractor treads and all that kind of stuff. And I still have them. Actually, they're up at my dad's place right now.
Really?
In a box.
I'll be.
In a box that one of his friends made for me to keep them all in. I just have to get up there and bring them back. So, you know, and I'm trying to figure out who to give them to now. It's like, I probably want to give them to like my grandkids at some point, but I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's very telling as we talk about the loss of these toy stores, how our memory that we have that is indelible with us is as much about the experience mm-hmm. with the toy or what it was than it was the store itself. It was what it meant to you or what the toy you got from there. That's very telling. It's something that was lost. We gain a lot, but there's a little bit of that experiential element of things that we lose a little bit over time to progress. But doesn't mean we have to stop remembering or stop collecting your cool toy mm-hmm. that you have, like your Fisher-Price or your Erector set or whatever it is, Mo. That's cool.
Yeah.
Where are you going to find all the hottest toys?
On the planet Mars?
No!
On a mountaintop?
Uh-uh! Cause we got at KB Toy Stores. It's the place to shop. You'll see all the latest toys to choose from. Hot, we got at KB.
Can't find that popular new toy? If it's hot, then KB's got it. And you'll find a big selection of the hottest toy hits every day at all of our convenient locations.
all the latest toys to choose from. Hot, we got a KB.
If there was anything in this show you'd like to learn more about, the show notes which accompany each episode are full of links to click and explore. Catch up on past episodes and get pinged every time a new one's released by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And you know, iTunes reviews help more than you know, so if you haven't yet, please rate and review us in the iTunes app. And if you have a friend who isn't yet listening, why not? Tell them about us, they'll thank you later. You're our fourth listener, and we'd love to read your emails right here on the show, so hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is more than just this podcast. Our YouTube channel has hundreds of videos ready for you to enjoy, plus you can find our entire body of work on genxgrownup.com. That will bring to a close this reminiscent backtrack on old toy stores we remember growing up as Generation Xers, or Toy Isle, as George did in his dirt mall. Before we leave, I always like to take just a second here at the end to express our heartfelt thanks to the folks that support us financially over on Patreon. Literally keep the lights on here, support what we do on the podcast over on YouTube and on the website. And I want to thank each and every one of you. Thank you, T2, Chad, Blasted or Stashed, Butter Spider, Steve and Jason, Greg Z, Davis, Levi, Mike C, Dana, Arlem, Slowmo, Greg L, Matt, Chet, Marcus, Thomas, Jonathan H, Travis, Stu Monkey, Lee, Agile, Ben, Shelby, Adam, Sean, David, Dan, Mark, Tony, and Stu Baca. Thank you, each and every one of you, for your continued support. It means so much to us. If you also believe in what it is that we do and like to support us, Mo, would you tell the fourth listeners how they can go about adding their names to this roster?
Oh, absolutely. All they have to do is go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon, and it'll take you right to the link. As George just said, that's the free part. Then it takes you to the pay part, and which is a good apt way of putting it. But yeah, and then we have all sorts of different levels, and really, like I said, anything anybody can give, we always appreciate. And if you're able to give a little more, we have some add additional content. We have some swag to give away. And if you really want to give a lot, we even have a special, I think we still have a slot open at our special, the super patron level or
influencer,
sure, whatever.
Influencer.
It's influencer level. Very much influence is what we do. Yeah.
Yeah. Where we actually have a separate Discord channel for them where we talk about our future ideas and they give us ideas, and it's pretty awesome. And we have a lot of fun even interacting with them. And, you know, we appreciate everything that everyone already gives, especially in these times. But if you're able to give us a couple bucks a month, that would be awesome.
No kidding. Yep. It very much keeps gas in the tank and keeps us moving forward. It's so much appreciated. Thank you to all of you. And to those of you joining in the near future, thanks to Mo's eloquent display of how to go about getting it done. That is going to wrap it up for this edition of the Backtrack. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another, and next week with a regular edition of our show. Until then, I am John. Mo, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, man, always fun.
George, you know I appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir.
Fourth listener, it's you we appreciate most of all, though, and we will talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. I am John. Joy's me.
Multiple joys.
Three, two. Joining me as always is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And George is here. I'm, God damn it, I did George twice again.
Hey,
sorry, Mo.
How's
you're
it
out.
Going, guys?
Whoever. One more time. Joining me.
I don't think Zoom is our concern anymore.
Yeah, no, that's a problem. Or anything. That's right.
If you're looking to replace a single component, I think I found which one it is.
Point of failure.
It's clearly the host. You can give me a yeah or something, George, and I'll throw it in there. I jumped.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That just said, that just screamed, George.
More than anything. Yes. Okay.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.